Okay, we'll do the last one today. Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva Praninam Deham Ashritaha Pranapana Samayuktaha Pachamyannam Chaturvidham. So aham, Krishna says I. When he says I, we don't only take it as only Krishna, that blue boy of Vrindavan, but Krishna is the total consciousness. When he says I, he's identifying himself with Brahman, the total con. Does not mean that, oh, Shiva bhaktas will say, how is Krishna saying I am that? How about Shiva? Or Jesus followers will say, why should I believe him? Krishna is not the one. What, when he says I, he does not mean only I as Krishna, but I as the supreme consciousness. So, aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva. Vaishvanara is the digestive fire. You know, we all have the fire in us. That's why, you know, we know that our temperature is maintained at 98.4 or around up, you know, up plus and minus 1 or 2. If it goes too high, then you say, oh, he has a fever. And then you give medicine. If it goes to 102, 103, and if it goes below 95, 94, then he says, oh, he has hypothermia and we have to give him warm blankets and give him warm. Otherwise, he will die. So the temperature is maintained around 98. And also, as we know, once a person dies, then what happens? You say, thanda pad gaya. You know, that is one of the phrase in Hindi. And he became cold. That means he's dead. Now there is no fire in him. And he is going to. And then the body slowly loses its temperature and comes to the room temperature. It becomes 30 degrees or 40, 50, whatever the temperature of the room is. So the body is unable to maintain the heat. As long as the Lord is functioning, we can do it. Once the Lord leaves, the body becomes cold. So he says, aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva. Bhutva means becoming. The same idea is this 14th verse I also have written here. So if you are not able to follow that, it's a little small. I rewrote it on this side. So the same concept. So because it's written small, but those people can see it over there. So he says, aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva Prani Nam Deham Ashritaha. So of the humans, the pranis, not only humans, all beings, plants, animals, birds, fish, humans, all Deham Ashritaha. I support and I enter the bodies of all beings, and as the Vaishvanara, as the digestive fire, I heat up. I am the one that gives heat to all beings. We are warm because the Lord is present. That's why we call ourselves warm-blooded animals and not cold-blooded. Then he says, prana apana samayuktaha. So associated with prana and apana. Prana is the... So there are five pranas. I'll just briefly mention those. Prana apana samayuktaha pachami annam. I digest the food. Chaturvidam. There are four kinds of food. We say, what do you mean four kinds of food? There are thousands of foods. You know, there is so many vegetables and so many fruits and so many leaves that we eat. You know, gobi and all this, palak and all, you know, spinach and all. And then there is the cow and, you know, pig and then there is fish and there is cockroaches and, you know, snakes and, you know, people eat all kinds of dogs. And then there is all these different varieties of fish. So there are so many. What do you mean there are four kinds of food? So our Rishi said that ultimately all food can only be taken by the mouth, right? You cannot say I'm going to eat from the nose or eat from the ear. No, you can only eat from the mouth. So there are only four ways to eat. The food can be either chewed, swallowed, lick or suck. That is the four ways. Either you can chew the food or you can swallow like water or you can lick. Like, you know, like a mango, you know, we lick the mango, aam chuste hain, they say, or like ice cream. You can lick or you can suck with a straw or with anything. So all the food in the world is divided into chaturvidam, four kinds, food that you can chew, the solid food, swallow, lick and suck. So he says these four kinds of food I digest. Then he talks about the prana, apana, And so I thought I'll just briefly cover the five pranas which are mentioned in our scriptures. So the first prana is the intake. So prana means intake. So whatever I take in is called prana. What I have taken from my, that's why they say pranayam, where you control the breath. So pranayam is not only intake of the breath, which is of course in yoga they popularize that, but also living a life of moderation, taking in moderation, controlling your intake, not only of your breath, but of your food. So prana means intake. Apana means excretion. So whatever food you don't need at the end of the day, next morning, you excrete. That is apana. Then samana is the digestive capacity, digestion. Digestion. Vyana is circulation. So when the food is digested, then it is taken by the circulatory system, by the blood from the intestines. It goes to the liver where it is metabolized and goes to all the organs, and they make the bone marrow and fat and bones and, you know, muscle and nerves, whatever is required. And then udana, some people have different interpretations. The one that I had heard is it is a forceful expulsion. So udana, like when you sneeze, you know, you're forcefully expelling your, you know, your breath to clear something in your nose. Also, they say at the time of death, the subtle body, the mind and intellect has to be pushed out, forcefully expelled. So udana becomes very active at the time of death because this body is dead and this subtle body now needs to get out, you know, forcefully and go to the different worlds, different higher and lower worlds, and then go for a while, enjoy and suffer heaven and hell. And then, or if you don't believe in heaven and hell, wherever it's wait in some zone, and there it then take waits for a new body. So the subtle body has to be forcefully pushed out. So udana becomes active at the time of death. Some people also say udana means the ability to understand, the ability to comprehend. So there are different interpretations, but that's the one that I find appeals to me. It's kind of easy to understand. So these are the five pranas. So it says that aham vaishvanaro bhutva. So I am the digestive fire. It's very interesting, you know, the four kinds of food. If you think about it, how do we constantly strain the poor Lord, you know, who is sleeping within us, trying to digest the food, how much trouble he goes through. Especially Indian parties, you know, if you have been to Indian parties, it's so interesting. First of all, they'll give the time of 6, nobody shows up till 7:30 or 8, right? First thing it's a Friday, shaam ko hai, kaun itni jaldi jayega? So 8 o'clock they'll show up, they'll have snacks and then appetizer and few drinks. You know, you have to have some scotch, right? Otherwise the party is not complete. So around 9, 9:30, 10, they're serving dinner. And the poor Lord is wondering, 10 baje khana kha raha hai, why is he eating at 10 o'clock at night? So he'll eat a heavy meal, you know, all rich, you know, from these restaurants full of cream, and rich food. And by 11, 12 o'clock, they finish their dinner. And then what is that? Then the Lord says, okay, now 12 baj gaye, at least midnight. Now at least the guy stopped eating. No, he wants ice cream. So big bowl of ice cream, you know, from this, on the way home to this, let's stop at the Rosemary's or some ice cream store. And so the poor Lord is saying, ye kya aa raha hai? You know, what is this coming? This guy midnight also, he's eating ice cream. Okay, chalo, then poor guy is digesting the ice cream, all the heavy, you know, cream and all the food and all that. And he goes home, he said, need a cup of coffee. So 1 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning, he wants coffee. So he'll drink coffee at 1 o'clock. And then he said, now I can't sleep. So at 2 o'clock, he'll get up and have a glass of milk because milk helps me to sleep. Bhagawan says, when is this guy going to stop eating? You know, whole night. And the poor guy has to digest the food and work so hard. And, you know, we put so much strain on him constantly, on our digestive fire. So they say, be thankful that you are not able to do anything on your own. You say, how about eating? At least I eat on my own. I say, no, you don't even eat. All you can do is chew the food. After that, when you chew the food, the epiglottis closes, right? If the epiglottis didn't close, the food would go in your lungs. Do you tell your epiglottis to close? No, it closes by itself. And then do you tell your esophagus to do the peristalsis, to move the food down? No, He moves it. Do you tell your stomach to churn the food around and to expel it into the intestines? No, he does it. You tell the intestines, okay, secrete amylase and lipase and protease. No, we don't do anything. All you do is just chew. That's all you do. Rest is everything else the Lord is doing for us. So that's what they're saying. That in fact, it's so interesting, this five pranas, they knew 10,000 years ago when the rest of the world were probably in caves, and our rishis already knew that we have this digestive system and we have this circulatory system. It is so amazing that there's a Upanishad called Prashna Upanishad, and that also is several thousand years old. And when you read that Upanishad, it is like you're reading an anatomy textbook. It is so precise, so beautifully. They have described every layer of the body and all the nerves and all the marrow. It's so beautiful. It's amazing. Actually, that was the first Upanishad we heard, Neeru and I, when we went to San Diego. And we heard from Swami Tejomayananda Ji and Gurudev. Swami Chinmayananda was doing Bhagavad Gita. And it was like I was in my anatomy class. It is amazing how much detail they have gone into. And this was thousands of years ago, before they had any instruments or how they knew all that. But it is so beautiful that it is so very well described. So he says, I am the digestive power that digests the food. I am the one that excretes, that knows, okay, this much food he or she needs and this much they don't need. This is not digestible, excreted. I'm the one that circulates in your body and, makes the blood move. I am the one that makes the marrow, everything. So the pranas are so important. That's why the physiological functions, one has to always be thankful to the Lord. And that's why they say eat healthy and exercise and take care of your body, because your body is a temple. It's a temple. The Lord resides in your body. So respect it. Not that you spend hours beautifying it. No, that's not the idea. The body should be nourished so it can be of service. My body has been given to me by the Lord to serve the world. That is the only reason I'm here. One is to serve the world, and second is to realize God. Those are the only two reasons I'm here. Everything else is secondary. So that's why it says that, may I have a sthira rangehi stushtu vagam sastanubihi yashema deva hitam yadayuhu. There is a very beautiful prayer. It says, O Lord, sthira rangehi stushtu vagam sastanubihi. Whatever my body I have been given, may it be healthy. Yashema deva hitam yadayuhu. So I want my healthy body, not so I can, be Mr. Universe or I can show off my body. No, I have a healthy body. So I may deva hitam yadayuhu. Whatever life you have given me, O Lord, whether I live 50 years, 60 years, 70, 80, 90, doesn't matter. Whatever life you have given, may I serve you and may I know you. That is the only purpose of having this human body. So worship that body, take care of it, and use it to make the world a better place. That is what the message of this Bhagavad Gita is. I thought I would end today just talking a little bit about the pranic energy or the kundalini. I'm not a yogic expert, so I don't know too much about it. But they say that it is the pranas are not only the physiological functions that we all have, the excretion, digestion and all that. But there is a pranic energy that is going through, that is primordial, that is there from the beginning of creation, because there was this energy which is responsible for all the creation. Actually, all of us are nothing but energy. We think we are this solid hand and toes and all. Actually, when you analyze it, it's just all neutrons, electrons, protons circulating in a field of energy. So actually, we are all energy particles, and my energy and her energy and her energy, we are all nothing but that pranic energy functioning, appearing to be solid. Even this table and everything is actually nothing but energy. This is, of course, inert, but we are, alive. So when the yogic masters talk about the kundalini process, they say kundalini is the energy at the base of the spine. And it is this energy which needs to be channeled upwards. So through meditation, through prayer, also when you are doing service, when you are helping others, the Kundalini is actually being utilized. They say when you work selfishly only for yourself, you use very small part of your energy. But as you widen your sphere, as you serve others, as you help others, more and more of your energy is being utilized in a good way. Otherwise, it's just lying dormant, useless. And also they say that after a certain age, you know, of course, we need to procreate and have children, but excessive indulgence, you know, also dissipates your Kundalini, your energy. So that energy, which is after a certain age, when you don't need children and all, then that energy should be, of course, I'm not saying that everybody should become monk or, you know, not like that. But the idea is that the energy should be conserved and channeled upward. And as the Kundalini moves upward, there are, of course, the yogic masters teach certain exercises and all. I'm not an expert. But the idea is that we all have this storehouse of energy within us at the base of our spine. So as you do more meditation, more prayer, more service, that energy moves up, 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 and ultimately it fills your whole being. And as it moves to the higher centers, you know, we have the six chakras, you know, Agnya chakra and Vishuddhi and all those six chakras, the forehead, the neck, chest, belly button, groin, and tailbone. So the tailbone is the lowest form of energy. As it moves up, up to the Agnya chakra, that's what the idea is, that, you know, you open your third eye of wisdom. So that is the basis of that thinking. I don't know too much more about it, so please don't ask me. But whatever little I have studied, so there are certain exercises and techniques given. So that's why the pranas are very important. They're very valuable and they should be utilized in a good way. And that's why they're doing pranayama. Again, pranayama should be learned from a teacher, you know, it should not be done on your own, or just like the yoga and all. It's good to, that's why we have yoga teacher Barbara here, and then we have Dhawal on Tuesday. So it's good to learn from somebody who is certified. And so because the wrong use of that can also be harmful, especially pranayama, if it's not done correctly, it can be harmful. So that's why he says, I am the digestive fire and I am the pranas. And I nourish and sustain your entire body. So I am that. So that is the end of today's. Any questions or comments? Yes.
In the beginning you said that God is associated with the water.
No, I think sometimes people mix up spirit. Whether you are referring to spirit, like Atma, the word Atma or the word spirit, is sometimes used for God and sometimes used for soul. Even soul, they sometimes say soul is the eternal soul, or the soul is the individual. So that's why one has to use the word jivatma. Don't use the word atma or spirit. Use the word jivatma. Jiva means the individual. The individual mind and intellect is that, it is that that distinguishes me from you. Your emotions are different from mine. Your thoughts are different from mine. Your vasanas are different from mine. The body is the same. You and I are made of five elements. They're identical. The consciousness in you and me is the same as it is in all of us. But what distinguishes me from him and her are my emotions, my thoughts, and my desires. So this package is called jiva, jivatma, the spirit, what you call, that migrates. It's not God. God is Om. God is Om. It is this jiva, this individual package that you can call, that migrates. So the mind and intellect, subtle body, carrying the vasanas with it, the flavor of the vasanas, goes to another. It's not God. It is the individuality, the jiva, the jivatma. So that one has to, because people get confused. They say, no, Bhagwan, uski atma ko shanti de. May his soul rest in peace. Now, atma is used in two ways. Sometimes in the Upanishad, atma means Om, means Bhagwan, God. You know, there is one atma. You know, and then other times they say atma is the one that goes from one body to another. So you have to know the context. It's not God that migrates or carries the vastness. It is the individual packet. The consciousness, the spirit or the Bhagwan remains untouched. He doesn't go anywhere.
So the liberation would be
jivatma to atma. Yeah, to realize that I am that. That is liberation, that I am one with that. I am that. That is liberation. Actually, it's not I am that, that alone is. He alone is everywhere. That is liberation. Otherwise, sometimes people, when they say, I am that, then they get an ego that I am God and I am somebody great and everybody has to come and serve me. And no, that is not, then that is ego. When you say, he is me, everything is him and I am also him, that is liberation. That is true understanding. Where that individual ego goes away, the perceiver, feeler, thinker disappears, and then you see that the Lord alone is there in my body, mind, intellect. This is a kan kan me Bhagwan, that God is there in every inch of my body, every cell of my body. Every cell is multiplying. You know, the cell multiplies every few days. How does it multiply? We have 4 billion cells. And how do they multiply every day or every 7 days or 14 days? Because of the Lord's. In fact, every few months you get a brand new body. Because all the cells have multiplied and destroyed and new cells have been created. So every cell is him alone. So my body is nothing but that Lord, my emotions, my thoughts, everything. When that becomes, then you become a saint. A saint, that's why, you know, Mirabai said, Krishna alone is for me. I am that. Even Jesus said, the Father in heaven and I are one. So the saints and the wise people understand that, their oneness with the Lord himself. Shankaracharya, aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman. When he said that, what he means is everything is Brahman. Everything is that consciousness. But that's a good point. Thank you for asking. Yes?
What are your thoughts on energy healing?
I think it works. It does work. But it has to be done by a proper certified person. And again, it can work at a very subtle level. It cannot like cure cancer or gross things like that. Or if you have a, gangrenous something or something very major or pneumonia now. But it does provide a new, it can help support the healing. Yeah, I think there is some truth in that. Yeah, I think again, yeah, there is some truth to that. Yeah, but yeah, there are actually energy practitioners who actually can move energy. Again, you know, you have to have faith in that. And then again, that person has to be qualified and trained before he or she can do that. But yeah, there is some truth in that energy healing. I believe in that. I think that's because we are actually all energy. And if somebody can channel your energy, you know, and align your chakras, and there are certain mantras you can chant to align your 6 chakras, and then you can do it yourself, But a trained practitioner can actually align your chakras and do that without touching you. They actually work above your body. They don't touch. But they're able to move the energy. And actually, they can even tell which part of your body is sick. A true energy practitioner, she can just rub her hand over your body and she can say there is a problem with your eye, problem with your kidney. And they're very accurate because they can feel the disturbance in the energy. Yeah, no, there are energy practitioners who are excellent in that. Yes. But I think there is a field of that.
Right. That is just a little different.
True. True. But here, what different chapters he's trying to emphasize different things. Here, what he's saying is that I illumine all desires, good and bad. But I support the one who has good desires. I am behind that person. One who is evil, that person is on his own. I don't help that person anymore. Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah. But all desires are nourished by him. Even a murderer, you know, stabbing somebody, like that guy who stabbed, you know, people in the bus, you know, in Israel, he was there. He was the one giving him energy to stab. You know, otherwise, he wouldn't have been able to do that. So everything is in him. Yes. He's supporting everything.
So there is a discrimination.
Yes. No, it is the vastness. It is the desires, good or bad. A person with good vasanas will do good things. Person with evil vasanas will do bad things. So the goal of spirituality is to substitute negative vasanas with positive vasanas, negative desires with positive desires, and ultimately go beyond them to that self, where you become desireless, where everything happens spontaneously, not with a desire to do anything. It is spontaneous. But yeah, it is the vasanas. That is the whole game. So when they say purification of the mind, you have to purify your vasanas. That is all that is required. There's nothing else. That's why they say only in a pure mind the Lord resides. Lord resides in every mind, but you can see him just as a mirror. There may be a dirty mirror and a clean mirror, but the sun is reflected in the clean mirror. The mirror which is full of mud, the sun is still there, but it's not reflected. So similarly, in a clean mind, the Lord is reflected, Om, because the vasanas are minimal. But if the vasanas are dirty, then the consciousness being there but doesn't shine. That's the difference between a saint and a criminal. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti 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 Hi, Harihi Om Sri Gurubhyo, Harihi Om.